now for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayres.
And welcome on into our streaming show today. We are so glad you're here. We're so glad that you found us on our News 4 Utah Plus app. Please tell your friends all about us because this is the best political show in the state.
The best.
I'm biased and I 100% admit that. But the politicians watch it and the people who are
so Rusty's family watches it.
Rusty listens on his walks and yells at his phone.
I've been yelling at my phone the last week.
Yeah. So anyone who's anyone is watching this show. So tell your friends. Today, we are going to hit topics like Planned Parenthood of Utah and others suing the federal government over the Big Beautiful Bill, a provision in it. We're also going to touch on our Utah House Speaker and how he's backing a doctor who's accused of some federal crimes related to COVID. A big decision by the IRS this week that churches can now endorse candidates that has implications here in Utah big time. So we'll touch on that. And then the drama is not over with the Big Beautiful Bill. So I know Rusty has some thoughts
on that.
Rusty Cannon's here. So is Taylor Morgan. Guys, introduce yourselves.
Rusty Cannon with the Utah Credit Union Association and President Chief Advocacy Officer there. But today's views are mine and mine only.
As they should be, yes.
Taylor Morgan with Morgan May Public Affairs, a local consulting and lobbying firm.
Very good. Guys, we're glad you're here. Producer Peter's here, too.
Hi, everybody.
Put on a button-up shirt for us.
Peter combed his hair today, too.
Yeah, a little gel, a little something.
I thought he had a haircut. He corrected me.
Actually, my barber has started making fun of me for this. He noticed I get a haircut quarterly. So the fact that I've just submitted my reports, they'll have me in any day now.
Yes, it's very good. What you can't see is Peter's wearing sweatpants under the desk.
Yeah. Well, he's wearing pants.
I'm going to let the audience draw their own conclusions.
All right, very good. Let's dive in, shall we? This week, a federal judge has ruled that the federal government cannot withhold Medicaid funding from Planned Parenthood for at least the next 2 weeks. Now, this is a provision in the Big Beautiful Bill called the defund provision, which basically pulls back people who use Medicaid cannot go to Planned Parenthood, presumably because they perform abortions. And so the federal government said this is something we don't want to fund anymore, being Planned Parenthood. Now, the lawsuit alleges that their free speech is being violated, that the government is denying them equal protection, and also that they are being singled out as an organization here. So what do you guys think? Does Planned Parenthood have a case here, even though a federal judge has paused this, but we don't know where it'll go?
I think they have a case, but perhaps more importantly, I think Planned Parenthood has really struggled and gone on the wrong side of the politics of perception. Yes, it is true that legally, technically, they do provide health care services beyond just abortion. Mm-hmm. And that is the argument that they continue to make. And it's the legal argument they make.
And they also say they don't use federal money for abortions.
Correct.
They have it kind of siphoned off.
Correct. However, they are known.
Money's fungible.
What is their name? Their name is Planned Parenthood. They market themselves, their outreach, they are known. Their entire brand is based on abortion. And I'm agnostic as to whether that's good or bad in that case. I think it is a necessary service. It is health care. However, they have tied themselves up in this, I think, through their own politics and their own marketing. And if anything, just the reality of perception.
That there are states where abortion is still legal.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Right. But they are an organization that has positioned itself all around the politics of abortion. Now, in the past, perhaps under different administrations or different Congresses, that has benefited them. But in the current climate, in the current with the current Congress and the current administration, it is working against them. But I want to call out the reality of how they have positioned themselves through their branding and their marketing. It's a problem. We'll see how it plays out legally.
Yeah. So maybe we touch on that legal aspect, Rusty. Mm-hmm. How do they have a case here? The Constitution does allow Congress to have the purse strings, right? Decide where the funds go and decide what they fund. And that's really their main argument here is this is our job under the Constitution is we get to decide what we fund.
Yeah, and that's a valid argument. I think there are some specifics within statute, though, that this case might succeed. That meaning the government could, well, I should say the anti-abortion side could lose this, I think, mm-hmm. because there are some lines in statute that really, I think Congress is going about this the wrong way. They could do this more directly. I think there are some previous acts that are in statute that prevent them from doing what they're doing. I think they might actually end up losing this case. But to Taylor's point, politically speaking, they have pigeonholed themselves on the wrong side of this argument. And I think ideologically, they're somewhat under the gun. They talk about offering other services and healthcare services, but they have obviously always been Planned Parenthood and those types of things. I mean, you can call it reproductive care. That's like calling amputation mobility care. It's like it doesn't. It's still about abortion, generally speaking. And there are those that feel strongly about that and want to cut off funding to that source.
Have they been singled out by Congress? That's one of their legal arguments is it's being called a bill of attainder, right? Which is a legal word for you are taking us and just restricting our funding because of this service that we provide, to both of your points.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's their argument.
That's what you're saying, is they could win on that.
They're absolutely right about that.
Because the federal government is saying, no, we're not singling them out. In fact, our very own Mike Lee, Peter, if you can pull up his tweets, he kind of spoke out against this and basically said, if there's anywhere in the Constitution that says we can't defund Planned Parenthood, find it for me, because it doesn't exist. Well,
I think maybe we should refer to statute, not the Constitution in this case.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that he has a point there, right, on the Constitution, but there are places in the statute that might tie their hands on this. Mm-hmm. So,
interesting. Yeah. The other thing Mike Lee did was call out the judge in this case, and he said, unless I'm missing something, this feels like a very egregious overreach from a, quote, activist judge, and I want to call for impeachment of this judge. Ah. Do you guys see it that way?
My initial knee-jerk reaction was somewhat similar to Senator Lee, but after I researched it a little bit, I think that's a little bit of an overreach. I think this judge might be on the right side of the case. As disappointing as that is for me as a conservative, so I would probably differ.
So you're saying Mike Lee should research things before he tweets. Is that what you're saying?
Shocker.
Rim shot.
Can we get a rim shot over here, Peter?
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Shocker,
yes.
Mike Lee is wrong.
Yeah. So, but I think in this case, right off the cuff, he makes a fair point. But if you do just a little bit of research, you see it's statute that's the problem on this issue.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We'll see where it goes. For the next 2 weeks, at least, everything is paused. And then we'll see what the federal courts do with it after that. Let's move to a local topic that caught my attention at the beginning of this week. And that is our current Utah House Speaker, Mike Schultz, and a couple of other GOP House members are backing a doctor who is federally charged in a COVID situation where he is accused of discarding COVID vaccines. He's accused of faking vaccine cards, signing people's cards when they didn't get the vaccine. And then he's accused of giving his minor patients saline so they wouldn't know they weren't getting a vaccine. They couldn't go tell their little friends or whatever. Taylor, what do you make of the speaker joining this rally? He's rallying on the steps of the federal courthouse with all these supporters backing this doctor who's facing federal charges. Is this surprising to you from Utah Speaker of the House?
A little bit, Lindsay, but in large part, no. I think when I say it's a little bit surprising, I think that we know Speaker Mike Schultz is potentially positioning himself to run for governor. So on one hand, perhaps he is trying to really gin up support among that far right, more radical, more vocal base. Mm-hmm. However, if I were advising Speaker Schultz, I would say steer clear of supporting a doctor who is being charged by the federal government for fraud and for destruction of government property, right? It's one thing to raise concerns about COVID. Looking back and in hindsight, I think we all have issues with the way that COVID was handled and the way we responded to COVID. But to support this doctor in these circumstances with these charges, I think is just very misguided. And I think the speaker, unfortunately, is taking bad advice and showing a little bit of a lack of judgment in this case.
It is interesting that he does show up and kind of hitches his wagon a little bit on this train. I want to play some of his comments from the rally, because to your point, Taylor, he's really saying here he feels like the government went too far in COVID mandates in certain situations.
And I agree with him. Yeah. I agree with him. That doesn't mean you show up here and say this.
Okay, let's watch that clip from Speaker Schultz.
You had to have a vaccine passport to walk down the streets and go into a shop, to go to a jazz game, to go to a restaurant. That was unbelievable. It was wrong. And I'm grateful. Super grateful for those of you that stood up, came out, pushed back, and said, enough's enough. We're not going to let the government take away our freedom.
So, Rusty, yeah. The speaker here and the group that showed up see Dr. Michael Kirk more as a hero, as defying the federal government to stand up for something that he thought was right. I've had lawmakers in my Twitter feed compare that to Harriet Tubman. I've had lawmakers compare that to standing up to Nazism. These are Republican lawmakers in Utah. I mean, how do you see this?
I have a few thoughts. Number one, that was a bold move for him to show up. I probably would have made a different decision, but does it surprise me? Just like you said, it doesn't surprise me. Let's also remember this doctor is accused of these things. Does Fair. Not mean he is guilty Fair. Of those things. I think anybody who's been charged would appreciate that. So, but on the other hand, this reminds me of the Martha Stewart case. She didn't go to prison for insider trading. She went to prison for lying about it. Mm. As much as this doctor had strong feelings and these elected officials have strong feelings about what we went through in COVID, and I have the same feelings, it drove me nuts. It still drives me nuts.
Yeah.
But that isn't a reason to defend defrauding, scheming, or doing something illegal. There's no defense for that. And so I think those are two separate issues. I get what he's saying, and I get the point. I think feelings are still very raw about what happened in COVID. I think that's what he was tapping into. But I would not have made the move of going to defend in this case. I think Taylor makes a good point. I think there's maybe a political angle there, but I'm not surprised by any of this.
Right. So you're saying that he may have wanted to express these views because, like you, he felt that the government went too far with COVID and hitched his wagon here because this was a way he could do that.
Yeah. And I think after time has passed, but we can look back in history with a little bit more perspective. Just my personal opinion, I think we'll look back at those years and realize that a lot of the stuff we did was absolutely ridiculous. Right. Yeah. And I think people are really still quite mad about it.
Yeah. Tell now, me what you think was ridiculous.
Well, let's like, for instance, you I think I remember a Salt Lake newspaper, which shall remain unnamed, calling for those.
There's only two.
Yeah.
So.
Calling for those that aren't obeying these mandates to be arrested. Like, I mean, there were types of things now looking back to where we were told you have to do this. You have to do this. That just now we're just based on very thin ice as you go back and look. So I think people are justified.
But
in
we're
being
out
upset
of
about
COVID
it.
Now because of the vaccine. So wasn't the federal government really
pushing? I got the vaccine.
Pushing?
I'm happy I did and all that stuff. But I just think the overreach, I think anyone needs to remember just how raw those feelings were and how upset people were about the freedoms that they felt like they deserved and how they were impinged. So I think that's it.
Let me just say that I think as a privileged white entitled male Utahn, I will admit and honestly say that COVID was the first time that government infringed upon my rights.
Really?
That was my first experience with having the federal government, the state government, county, city government really limit my rights. Mm-hmm. That was uncomfortable.
So
that
you
was
felt
new.
Like you couldn't go places if you didn't get the vaccine.
Right.
Like you
I had never experienced anything like that before. Mm-hmm. That was just my personal experience. Yes. I didn't like it. That doesn't justify any reaction to it in one way or another. But the point is that there are some valid perspectives on both sides of this. Disappointing, I believe, that Speaker Schultz would support the doctor for these specific acts. Hmm. I understand why he's talking about COVID in general. I feel the same way. But again, that doesn't mean you show up at this event and say what he did.
Right.
A little bit disappointed by that.
If I can introduce two more names into this conversation just while we're still on the topic. On the federal level here, you kind of have a funny thing going on within the Trump administration where these are federal charges, right? They're being prosecuted by the Trump Department of Justice. Obviously, it was filed under Biden, but they've continued the prosecution. But then on the other end of things, as recently as April of this year, Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy called Dr. Moore a hero.
Right, but we learned just today, Peter, that Pam Bondi is not going to stop this trial.
Yes. So the question is, you have two cabinet secretaries kind of on opposite ends of this. Obviously, Schultz and Kennedy have been making some public appearances together on the MAHA stuff. Mm. Where does this kind of fall on the inter-party triangulation on like the federal level? I mean, could we see a pardon if RFK has the president's ear on this kind of thing?
I would just say the average Utahn, especially the average voter, even Republican voters, are not tracking this issue at all.
No, this is water under the bridge.
It is.
I'm surprised it's such an issue at this point.
Yeah.
The feelings, I share his feelings of what the speaker said there. Would I have shown up to defend someone who is accused of committing fraud? No. There's no excuse. Like with Pam Bondi and all, of course, they should be prosecuting fraud. Fraud is fraud. It doesn't matter what your ideology is.
There we go. We will leave it there. Thank you guys both for your opinions. Let's move on to another national issue that will have local implications. And that is a decision this week by the IRS that churches can now endorse political candidates from the pulpit without losing their tax exempt status.
Wow.
We think immediately here locally of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the predominant faith here in Utah. I could never see the church going so far as to endorse a political candidate.
I think
so far as they've come out and said, we still stand firm that we remain politically neutral. But what do you make of this decision and how it impacts Utah?
Well, I think this decision is largely a product of legal action in the South. Some statements by megachurch pastors and, you know, other religious leaders, predominantly in Texas and other southern states. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has always taken more of a nuanced position when it comes to bipartisan politics. I do not see this really having any impact on changing Utah's predominant faith's position when it comes to endorsing candidates. However, the big question that comes to my mind is, what are the implications when it comes to other 501c3 tax-exempt public charities endorsing candidates or directly supporting political issues and campaigns?
Right, because right now they're not allowed to.
They're not allowed. This ruling doesn't directly change that. However, I see legal action coming from those kinds of organizations.
Because if a church is a 501c3 and they get to do it, why doesn't the nonprofit?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy Sundays as a day where I don't have to hear about politics.
Yeah.
I think it, in my view, religion is...
I don't know what church you go to, Rusty, because I hear about it at church more than anywhere
else. I'm sorry, because I don't think there's a quicker way to disunify any congregation than to mutter a few words about politics.
That's
so
fair.
Let's hope it stays
Depends
that way.
Depends on what politics you're talking about, right?
Yeah, well, these days, I don't think it matters. I think either way, you're going to take 50% of that room or congregation and send them over there and the other 50 over there.
It's about that.
It's a bad idea.
In my congregation, I won't say the W word,
okay,
but in my Sunday congregation, it's probably 95.5.
Okay, interesting.
And
Taylor,
4% of the five aren't even there.
Okay,
let's be honest.
They're only there for the first hour.
That's right.
I'm very curious, though, about this from a political consultant perspective, Taylor. Would you ever advise one of your candidates to go seek an endorsement, or would you try to lobby for an endorsement from, say, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints or any other faith?
No, what I have done on behalf of issues and candidates, campaigns in the past, is reach out to religious organizations here in Utah and encourage them to make statements, official statements, say over the pulpit, encouraging voter participation. That, I think, is highly effective. That is really the only kind of thing I would advise campaigns or candidates to do.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that voters respond to that call to action in terms of just voting. However, when it comes to Utah politics and Utah candidates, there are some maybe better ways to imply connection with the predominant faith without explicitly doing so.
You know, we saw this a little bit in the race for governor last cycle with Brian King. Brian King, running against Governor Spencer Cox, really went hard on his faith and said, I am a Democrat because of my Mormon faith, not in spite of it.
And he alienated many voters by doing so. Brian King, as a Democratic candidate for governor, because he explicitly talked about his faith, his Mormonism, he lost voters. He was the worst performing gubernatorial Democratic candidate in decades, I believe, because he offended a lot of LDS voters by doing so.
Is it just the fact that, like, when we're making a political decision, we don't want to hear what faith you are?
Exactly.
So we want to vote for you based on issues.
We call them Diet Coke Mormons.
Okay.
Is how I what I call
That's
them.
A good way to put it.
Don't you dare tell me explicitly how to vote on issues or candidates. Don't tell me who to vote for or, you know, who I shouldn't vote for.
Mm-hmm.
However, you can imply positive values and shared values among candidates. But the moment you cross that line of being too direct and telling me how to vote, you lose me.
So that's what you feel like Brian may have done in that
race. Absolutely.
Well, I think that was one of the dumbest political decisions I've seen in a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To be blunt.
Yeah. Okay.
Agreed.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, we shall see how this all goes. Again, I can't see the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints or any bishop in any congregation ever getting up and saying, vote for candidate X.
Yeah, like, let's hope not.
That,
am I going to get in trouble for using the M word? I think I said it twice.
Mormon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I shot a text off already for
The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, just to
you know,
be clear.
Can I just say, from a TV perspective, it's really long. It's a mouthful. It's a mouthful. Yeah. It takes like six seconds.
I'm technically in trouble right now. I've abbreviated it on the banner, which I do think is against it.
That is a no-no, Peter. You need to refer to the official media guide.
You will be getting a disciplinary counsel coming your way.
I think he's already had that.
Yeah.
My ringer is off for now. It'll be on in about 5 minutes.
Sounds good. All right, finally here, let's wrap up with the circling back to the One Big Beautiful Bill. Let's touch a little bit how the drama is not kind of over with this, because now that the law is signed and it is gone into effect, there could be some changes coming to things like Medicaid, things like SNAP. Rusty, I'm going to start with you. What changes to Medicaid concern you, and what do you feel like is being maybe misrepresented?
Well, I won't go as far as to say that everybody is lying about the bill, but I think it's pretty close. So you hear a lot of people come and talk about, well, let's talk about a few things. Don't let me forget about taxes. But first, Medicaid. They talk about, and reports come, I read a story for a news organization the other day. The headline was, you know, deep cuts to Medicaid, but then down in the article it explains it's not an actual cut, it's work requirements, right? So if you look at what happened after Obamacare passed, since what, 2010 or so, over 20 million able-bodied adults have been added to Medicaid.
So you're saying too many people are on Medicaid now and got added because of Obamacare, and now we're getting them off.
So when they say 200,000, let's pick a number, 100,000 Utahns could lose their Medicaid benefits. That's assuming that you're saying, hey, able-bodied males that need to work, refuse to work, yeah, they might lose it. All you're saying is you've got to go work or volunteer for 20 hours a month. 20 hours a week, right? 20 hours a week, 80 hours a month to maintain these benefits. That actually makes complete sense in my mind. So to say that they're just going to have it stripped away, the marketing of this is saying, no, they're cutting those benefits. That is absolutely not true.
I see.
Anybody that depends on Medicaid that truly deserves it, women, children, those with disabilities, this will bolster the program for them. It will not harm them one iota.
I want to play this clip right now while we're on this topic from a woman named Gina. She was on our Inside Utah Politics episode last week, and we talked about who might lose coverage under these cuts. And I think her point, to your point, Rusty, is interesting, because she's saying there are people who will inevitably fall off because they can't perform these work requirements. Let's listen to what she said.
There's always going to be scammers. There are always going to be people who work the system, and those people will still be able to work the system. It is the people without access to technology, without access to transportation, who can't jump through all the hoops that work requirements will require in order to maintain their eligibility.
So she's talking about SNAP there, right? Because we're bridging to SNAP instead of Medicaid? Or is she talking about Medicaid?
I can't remember the context. Were we talking about SNAP?
So the context of that conversation was about SNAP, but I think the point is to work requirements
as a general policy.
Yeah, so on SNAP, so here's where I don't buy that, because the SNAP portion, all they did was extend it 5 years. You already have work requirements to age 49. Mm. They're moving it to 54. That's it.
Yeah,
they can surely handle that requirement. I just, because everyone up to 49 has been handling it so far, it's working fine. Adding another 5 years to that and then slowing the growth of the program is all that the bill does. It will not take food out of anybody's or any SNAP benefits away from someone that currently gets it if they're willing to fulfill those work requirements. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the whole story.
I agree with Rusty on this. And you got two Republicans here, right? So maybe, hey, did you just roll your eyes?
No, I...
Peter,
I had a twitch.
Can we replay that?
This is all on tape.
That was an aggressive eye roll from Lindsay. But no, really, you do have two conservative Republicans here. So I agree with Rusty. No surprise there. But I just want to call out and mention that, no offense to boomers, but our real budgetary problem is Medicare, not Medicaid. Mm. Yeah, we need work requirements. People are defrauding the government. But the big pool of money that we really need to limit and cut somehow is Medicare. Medicaid is a bit of a drop in the bucket relative to Medicare. That's our big budget problem. We can't afford it.
Now, all that being said, the Republicans, job is to counter that. They have done somewhere between an abysmal to a non-existent job of, of countering these. I don't know of a single Republican that is out there making the arguments that I just made. Like, where are they? It's like, take a minute.
Well, I think the bill's passed, so they're kind of like, what does it matter
but now? Now they're going to get beat up for the next 18 months about it. Start saying the truth about it, in my mind. Well, and I just can't believe no one is literally, they're literally not saying
part
a word.
Of the problem here is the political discourse is revolving around SNAP and Medicaid when it should be focused on Medicare, because that is the problem when it comes to our deficit.
And to your point, Rusty, the just Americans in general, when they hear cuts to Medicaid and SNAP, they have an emotional reaction to it, right?
Exactly.
And they say, we want to help the vulnerable, right?
Yeah, it's a brilliant line to say, cut, but it's not an actual cut if you look at the details. Mm-hmm. If you're putting requirements in to maintain your benefits, there's no cutting of the actual benefits. The only thing that you could say is a possible cut is shifting some of those SNAP costs to states. But the states will, you know, likely pick that up, or they're going to need to pick that up. There is no reduction in benefit to any individual that is willing to fulfill the work requirements. And then those like veterans are exempt. All the the folks that you think should have an exemption, they are exempt.
We don't have time for you to go into detail, Rusty, but do you have any more grievances you want to air?
Like 27 more of them.
I know.
We'll do it on another show.
We can't afford it. Can't afford it.
Yeah, well, the main thing I wanted to say is just it's obviously a tax bill, and that's completely lost in the conversation. Yeah. The whole other argument that it benefits the rich only is completely hogwash, but that takes another 10 minutes to explain. And maybe that's the problem.
That is the problem. Yeah. And we appreciate both of your thoughts today. Thank you so much. Taylor, Morgan, Rusty, Cannon, thank you both for being here. Producer Peter, you're the best.
Thank you, y'all. I love getting a shout out at the end and the beginning. It's a big day for me.
Right? It's just...
Yeah, Peter.
I'm on my job today. All right. As always, you can find us, too, wherever you watch TV. Channel 4 here locally is ABC4. We have our weekly Inside Utah Politics that airs there as well. So we'd love to have you over there. You can find us wherever you podcast. Just search for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz. And, guys, appreciate it again.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks.
We'll see you next time.